Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here at B&Q, we've launched our brand new website, diy.ie. Browse thousands of products available for home delivery and 1 hour click and collect. Visit diy.ie today. You can do it when you B&Q it. Delivery and click and collect available on selected products and locations. Restrictions apply. Delivery charges may apply. See diy.ie.
Welcome to the Dope Black Dads podcast, a place where we are changing the narrative and having progressive conversations about black fathers, as well as creating a safe digital space for the community.
This is the Dope Black Dad podcast. My name is Marvin Harrison, and today I am with my brothers Marlon and Marvin. Marlon joined us last week to bring his ridiculous and actual insight as well. He had some real amazing contributions. He wanted women to be fathers. He genuinely believes that mothers can be men. So I'm really happy for him. He's discovered something today. He's also wearing a disgusting dirty top, which we won't talk about.
It's the best shirt in the world, man. I'm on this side.
The two Man United supporters on this thing. Can I be honest, yeah? When black men support Man United, I'm like, why? Like, how?
You can call. I think that's
nah,
a lot
come
to
on,
do.
Brother. Don't act like you was around when you were cold. You weren't a child. You weren't a child in 98.
My dad saw George Best and Dennis Law when he first came to England. Oh, and he was like, they were cold on the TV.
Let's go back to 1972.
Therefore.
No, what's your reason? So your dad made you do it, and Marvin, you said you can call, which was 1998. Yeah. Oh, it must be nice. I've always wanted to be a Gloria Hunter, but unfortunately I've had to be traumatized as an Arsenal fan. Sure, the thing is, yeah, I have a fraught relationship with football teams anyway, because I started off supporting Leeds United. No people know this, yeah. So I supported Leeds United from 91 to, like, what did I score? So 2004?
Why?
Five? Why? And basically what happened was, no, because when I was looking for a football team, my brother liked Arsenal so much and I hated his guts, yeah. But this is like 8 years old, hate his guts. Not real hate his guts, but I hated his guts. Now, I ain't supporting that team. I'm going to pick my own. So I basically went online. I went into the football sticker book.
Them lies. Them lies.
It was 2009.
Get the receipts.
I went inside the football sticker book, and I was looking for who has the most black players. Okay. And Leeds had Yeboah, Brian Dean, Rod Wallace, and who else was there? There was someone, Radebe. And I was like, this is it. Black people. They're as you can tell, I've been an activist since eight. The only black Leeds fan there is. And so then after I was with Leeds, and then I went to Arsenal from 2004-05, maybe, whenever we went into the League Two, maybe 2006, all the way up until now. But about 3 years ago, when I worked at Manchester City, I was like, fuck this shit. This is... Arsenal are so bad and so badly run that if I'm going on loan, I basically said that I'm Yaya Toure, and I went on loan to Manchester City and had two great seasons. So won the league 1 year, and I came back 2 years ago. It's been quite nice. Have you ever considered swapping teams? Is that ever a real thing? Well, I will ask you guys, because you're fudging Man United, isn't it? But have you ever considered it for a little bit?
Do you know what? I really, really like Tottenham. And obviously, I grew up in Tottenham.
Antithesis
so.
Of me, bro. You're like, how could you be so opposite but so similar at the same time? Why Tottenham, bro? What about them?
Because I lived there, but I really like them. I really like the style of play. Jurgen Klinsmann, Gary Lineker, Gascoigne, bad boy player. Love them. Always have done. I think they play. And do you know what? I hate Arsenal. I hate everything about them. But I like the way they play. I miss their ticket. They don't play like that no more. But their ticket-tackle football was a joy to watch them destroy West Ham or destroy Sunderland or destroy Stoke.
No, that's a disrespect. You know when someone's taking a piss, yeah? My man said West Ham, Stoke and Sunderland. Mate. Anyway, no one came here to listen to us talk about football because I think 65% of people that listen to this podcast are women. They're trying to escape the Euros, so we're not going to give them more football talk. Today was really interesting. And also, hi Marvin, how are you doing?
Not too bad, thanks. I'm still recovering from the fake news about my toes.
But... Bro. Do you know what? Yeah.
That was funny.
No, it was funny, yeah, but I felt like a bully because that's the first time we'd actually done an edit with you in it. And then it was like, am I taking a piss out of my friend?
No, it's cool, man. It's
you
cool.
Sure, though?
Yeah.
Them toes were mangled, bro.
Mangled.
Oh, that was funny. I don't even know how you found that. What did you type in Google?
Listen, you don't want to see my browser history, man.
How to make my raves like Marlon's.
Wow. Wow. So we shared in a group this week, yeah. Kevin Hart has sat down with Will Smith. And what's really cool about that is those are two men, obviously both from Philly, that doesn't mean that much to me, but the two men, late 40s into 50s, I think Will Smith might be 50 already, and highly accomplished, having a conversation about fatherhood. And it was the most valuable, rich conversation. You know, I felt like someone said, Marvin, we have a conversation just for you. It felt so personal because there were so many themes in there that I just felt like I'm trying to unpack myself. I'm trying to get better at. I'm trying to be aware of. And they had that conversation. And in many ways, from a fatherhood point of view, they've got children older, so they know the journey of fatherhood. And in business, they've obviously significantly more successful than I am. So therefore, I was able to see what that may look like in years to come. And I thought it was really beautiful. Did you guys actually get a chance to see it?
I did.
Yeah, I've watched it as well. Yeah.
How did it land to you? Was there any takeaways? I know you didn't get to finish it all, but was there any takeaways that you found?
There was two bits that I thought were really good. One bit was when Kevin was talking about how he angered the LGBT community and how his daughter responded to it. And he was like, you know, it's comedy. I'm just being me. That's who I am. And his daughter was like, well, no, but it hurts. You know what I mean? It's painful. And he had to then reflect and be able to mature and understand where his daughter was coming from and why it hurt and why it hurt the rest of the people outside. And then Will said a really interesting reflection that Jada had, that when celebrities or when they say something or do something, they're in the eye of the storm and it's calm because they said it. They don't really care what said it. Just where they're concerned is a bunch of trolls outside of them that are hurt. But when they step outside to the left or to the right into the storm, then it's like, oh my God, this is the pain and anguish I've caused. And people are taking it really, really personal. And then they went on to discuss how speaking, I think it was Will was talking about his first relationship or the first child he's got, and how when he sort of slandered her or said anything about the relationship that was negative, how the rest of the world was coming for his ex-wife and the pain that that caused her as well. So, and she had to have that honest conversation with him, is like, look, whenever you talk about how we were together before and it's negative, the world comes for me, and that's not good, and it reflects bad on the kids. I thought that was definitely quite, I think it's the conversations that we have, and as just because they're sort of like, you know, global celebrities, you don't think they have the same issues or problems, but they do. They do. They have exactly the same issues we have and the same problems we do and, you know, the same pain that we go through. Purely insightful. Purely insightful. And I'm almost getting to that point in my life with my daughter as well where, you know, I have views or, you know, things happen and my daughter's like, nope, that's not how it goes. You can't do that or you can't say that. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean that. I don't agree with that. And then you've got to reflect as a man and your teachings and as a father and you know, your direction of travel. And reflect on yourself, which you wouldn't have to do. You know, you're 30 something. You're the finished article, aren't you? and then you have to stop, pause, and reflect.
Yeah, no, I think Marlon's definitely reading my notes. I think a lot of what you said there is are the same things that I took away as well. But I think what I liked is seeing both of them come together, because you know sometimes when you're viewing Hollywood from the outside, they put everyone in competition with one another. So you wouldn't even imagine, or I wouldn't have imagined, that Will and Kevin would sit down and have this type of conversation. they almost make it seem like the Tupac and Biggie, you know, because they're both big actors. Will had his time, now it's Kevin's time, that they're not friends in that type of way, and they wouldn't have that conversation. So I think that was kind of myth-busting anyway for them to sit down and do that in such a candid way. But yeah, completely vulnerable, you know, open to having honest conversations and just laying it all bare. I like what Marlon referenced about the kind of the eye of the storm, because I think what they highlighted there as well is that your family can be affected by the things you say. So although you're tough and although you grew up in a particular way and you don't care about the backlash, if your daughter's going to school and she's hearing about it, it's going to affect her life. And Kevin made a joke, like, if he says his ex-wife's feet are big, you know, she's going to be cussed about that all day every time she steps out her house. But he doesn't notice it because he's not there. So he thinks it doesn't exist. He thinks, like, I guess he's in more of an echo chamber because he's just surrounded by who he chooses to be around, whereas everyone else is surrounded by people who they may not have an option whether they want to be around them or not. So I thought that was powerful. And I think the biggest thing I took away from it is one day you will have to sit down and explain your choices and your decisions to your children. And that's a tough conversation, you know, warts and all, everything you've done, you know, the good things, the bad things, they're going to want to understand how and why. And although you're the hero in your own story, when you're explaining it to them, they may see you as a villain. They may, as Marlon said, they may see something that you've done and see where you've caused hurt or pain. And you wouldn't have seen it from that perspective until you spoke to them. Mm. So yeah, that really stood out to me.
I kind of had, like, it was interesting because I almost needed it. There's two things. This week I watched Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, again. There was a scene in The Last Dance which was speaking about... So basically, he took the three... He'd done the 3 years, the three-peat, took a break. In the second year, halfway through the season, so like in March of the second season, he returns because there's a baseball lockout and he starts playing again. But his body, he isn't prepared, he's not fit. And so they get knocked out by, I want to say, the Knicks. And he's devastated. And so he doesn't go home. He just starts training like the next day. So he doesn't take a break. And then him and his team are like going hard and training, and he's pushing his team verbally, physically, emotionally. He's like pushing everyone's buttons to get more ready, because the Knicks at the time were a great team. So it was like whenever you get to the Eastern Conference semifinals or finals against the Knicks, you know, I need you to be ready. So all season, come in hot. And at the end of that season when they won it, they obviously interviewing everybody, but like Steve Kerr, Rodman, Pippen, and they're all just saying how hard Jordan rode us in the gym. He used to insult us, talk about this, say you're not strong, you're not this, like really just going in. And they were basically just saying that he was a bully. And then he's there playing in the video of these people's feedback of him that year, and he starts crying and asks for a break. And there was something really powerful about watching Michael Jordan cry for something that he did, which everybody lives off of. So like all of these people, their legacy is, I won 3 to 6 championships. Like in the game of basketball, I'm considered great on the basis that I won this many championships. Pippen got 6, Kerr got 3, Rodman, I think, got 6. So like, that's the context. And but at the same time, how they feel about what he made them become is still negative. And watching that make him cry because it almost felt like he was misunderstood really landed with me. And where that resonates then, because then it gets reinforced in this interview that they're doing, is this idea that like when you're the person that can drive the thing, you can't apply that energy into places where you want affinity. That's a really big learning. So like they're saying like, I run a company. This is what Kevin Hart's saying. I run a company. I'm CEO, chairman, leader of this. I'm doing a tour. And in that realm, it's like, yo, you do this, you do that, you go there. And it's you have to be that way because you're making 70 to 100 decisions every day. But when you go home, you can't talk to your wife like that. You can't talk to your kids like that. You can't talk to your mum like that and your brother and people that you actually want affinity with that you're not paying. So it's very difficult to come off that frequency of strategy, big decision, make money into, oh, let's sit and tell me about your thing. And both of them talked about struggling with like coming off the high of doing big things in a professional sense into being human and interacting with people that you love. And that just landed with me because I think many of my challenges personally as a man is that transference. So on Father's Day, there was a point I just cried in the morning, like a slight small, like a just, and it wasn't even a cry of anything. It was more like a tear of joy, really. It was a really powerful tear of joy on the understanding that this is the first time I've been able to be present on Father's Day. Like, I feel like I'm here. I felt like I was in the room. I wasn't preparing. Because last year, we was doing a campaign. I'm trying to message everyone. Write this, say this, do this. People are like, I don't know how it works. And you're fixing it. And the year before that, again, I was busy. And the year before that, I was like on the floor trying to find a friend to talk about how bad fatherhood was for me. And so that's the first year where I was like, wow, I can actually see the program. I can see Dope Black Dads working. Where like, now I'm here. And I don't want to be anywhere else. Like, I'm able to do it. And, you know, I feel like if you don't have that awareness early, you can really get 10, 15 years down the line with your children before you really sit with them and then realize that you haven't connected with them properly after so many years. So that was really, really huge to me and, like, super, super loud. Now, the other thing was we need older and wiser men to counsel with. Like, that's what I took away when I saw it. We need to be around men who are, like, 8 to 10 years ahead of you in terms of age and experience and things that you're doing to help coach us into some of the things and the pitfalls that may happen. So obviously with Will, what's happening with Jada, that's widely publicized, and Kevin getting caught cheating and having to explain to his daughter. You know, in the moment, I'm sure a man can justify, and pretty much all men who cheat justify, that it's all right, or it's worthy, or it's justifiable to cheat. But then no one talks about the other impact, like when your wife's eyes change, doesn't look at you the same, or when your kids, you know, Google you and they you know, hear about it and they see the destruction in the family. Like, no one really talks about that at length. And not just from a family point of view, but also from a professional point of view, I want that. I need that. I need to know, you know, things that I might think are just for me because someone doesn't, you know, Nina doesn't want to do something with me, so I just do it myself then. Then it's like, well, what's the cost of that? And so someone to give me that perspective on what they wish they had done is always useful. The people around us and what you talked about with the hurricane or the tornado being the eye of the storm, everyone gets knocked constantly. And I realized that a lot of people, when they didn't have answers from me or they couldn't get hold of me, would go to the next person they thought was closest to me for an indication of something. And if they weren't informed or if their answer wasn't powerful or clear, it just created lots of confusion. So that's really, really clear. That's really important. That's even for like simple things like family and, you know, accessing kids and, you know, what you're doing for a birthday, all those things matter. And then men need to learn to care more about the feelings and this idea about how violent it felt for a man not to care about a woman's feelings. Like, that's betrayal to them. That's the darkest, deepest thing. And I would love to hear what you guys think in terms of like caring about your own feelings. Is that something you've ever considered? Like, how deeply do you consider your feelings in the things you do in the name of fatherhood or partner or husband?
I mean, I want to say I'm always stuck in my feelings anyway. I think it's really important that one, you express your feelings. So I think I'm good in relationships. I'm good at speaking about how I feel, but I'm not very good at onboarding how a partner might feel. You know what I mean? And I want to hear, you know, this is how I feel in this moment in time. This is how it's made me feel. And then there's always a ricochet, isn't it? Well, I've heard what you said. Now this is how I feel. And I feel like that counteracts how I felt. But that's the idea of communication, isn't it? So I haven't totally mastered that yet. But I think it's important. I think especially with women and feelings, because they're more emotive than us, they need and should be heard more. You know what I mean?
How would you characterize your feelings though? Like what are the feelings that are ignored, that you ignore your own feelings of? Like, you know better or you feel like it should be something else, but you do it anyway for the mission of parenting, relationships, whatever the mission is.
I don't know. What are my feelings? That's a very good question. I don't think I've stopped to really consider what are my actual feelings. Like, you know, it's been such a whirlwind of trying to gain access, and now you've got the access, and now I've got to grow and rear my child, and you know what I mean? I don't think I've fully stopped to consider, you know, the emotions you feel are, you know, loss, you know, pain, probably the 7 stages of grief when you're not seeing your child. And then they sort of demise almost immediately once you get your child back and, you know, access is up, and then you're happy, and then you move into this weird space where, you know, am I doing the right thing? So you don't often have time to reflect on on how I feel. You know what I mean? And
I hear that. So then, Marvin, for you, what would you say are the things, yeah, that you do, like even like if it's an undeclared commitment or even a declared commitment,
yeah,
that you do for your kid, for your partner, for your family, that doesn't necessarily serve you, comes at a great cost, and you just say, fuck my feelings on this. Mm. I need to do it for... Are you present to like what that is?
I think I'm present. I think it's similar to like what Marlon's saying. I think I'm present, but I've never thought about it in that way. I think as... I don't want to use it as a blanket term, but I think as a man, you can almost forgo your feelings for the mission, as you said. But in doing that, you don't register as a feeling, if that makes sense. So it's like, if you're tired, but you've got to get shit done, you forget about being tired. Like, that doesn't even come into it. And then now when I think about it a week later, I won't remember that I was tired. I'll just remember that I needed to get X, Y, Z done. So I think for me, even as I listen to Marlon speak, I'm not present to my feelings in every moment. Maybe the extreme ends, maybe, you know, love or anger is more obvious. But on a day-to-day basis, it's more about the mission. As you said, it's more about just getting it done. So yeah, forgoing sleep or sacrificing my time, money, resource, whatever it is, it will be doing that as opposed to sitting in my feelings and thinking, actually, how do I feel about this? And it's an idea that I've tried to become more present to, but it's the whole unlearning and then learning something new, which from a young age, because I wasn't taught to, not for any negative reason, but I suppose, again, if my dad had the similar programming, it would have been exactly the same. So I'm just walking in the footsteps of what I think is normal. And it's not until you get older and you speak to someone who perhaps is more present in their feelings and they are able to understand and think about where they're coming from, then you realize you've got that gap. So I think, yeah, I'm completely there with how Marlon described. I think extreme ends, I'm good at judging. But on a day-to-day, I'm just so used to getting it done. I don't think about how I'm feeling in that moment.
Mm. What's interesting, yeah, is that like I've connected to the idea of providing in such a high level that I have to at times say fuck my feelings before, mentally in my head, I have to say it before I go and do something.
Yeah.
And what I realized is, yeah, is that not a lot of people actually do that. And not a lot of people understand that space of being in where like you have to say fuck your feelings to walk through a wall and achieve something so that your family have a certain level of comfort or so that you can afford to take a break. You know, I took 6 months off. That's a luxury to be able to go and do. I was still working, but I took 6 months off. That can only happen if I work to a significant degree. But then you realize you work to take time off and then it then becomes counterintuitive. But, you know, I realized that there was maybe if people are around you that don't understand what it takes to walk through a wall to achieve something, they don't understand when they're around you what it takes. So then they take it for granted. And so you do have to park your feelings. Like, you know, I know you've all been there, you do a school run in the morning and this is the time when you just need that extra half an hour. You just like, fuck it, fuck my feelings. I got to go and take my kid to school. I know that's my declared commitment. So it's not bad, but I'm abandoning myself. And I think every time you do that, I think it has an impact. And so when someone comes to you with their feelings, you're like, your feelings? Yo, do you know? Like, you know, yeah. Do you know this week? You start turning into, like, you're just not listening. And I think, you know, when people find things hard, you know, I find everything hard all the time. I just wear it well. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't think that this is easy to, like, do all these things. Like, I just do it. I woke up and I was like, oh, my God, there's this. Oh, we grew. Oh, my God. But no, it's like, actually, that was so effeminate. But it's fine. I'm at peace with it. But the reality is that when I try to explain to people the process to get the things that I get, I think many people believe that, like, and this is where people think of the Illuminati, or they think like you drink blood, or, you know, you hang around in some private nightclubs with older white men and get blessings. Mm. But the reality is, it's just hard work. So I think that's just like, I don't even know if it may not be relevant to everybody, but I do think we all, especially as men, sign up to abandoning our feelings to provide something on behalf of the mission. And every time we do it, and then someone comes to us with real feelings about something, which is too disconnected to like to be of use at that time in terms of feelings. And I think Will Smith's example was when Willow wanted to quit the Whip My Hair tour after she signed to Roc Nation and she's on tour and, you know, she's like day 3 or 30 and she's like, I want to go home. And he's like, go home. You made a commitment. You used your language to say you're going to do something and now you're not doing it. That's not okay. Like, forget your feelings. Do the mission. And that doesn't, you can't apply that to your children. You can't apply that to your loved ones. You can't respond to people that you care about that way, because it absolutely reduces affinity.
I think you're spot on. I think you absolutely hit the nail on the head. My mum once said to me at the end of my tether, she was like, "You look unkept. You look like no one loves you. Invest in yourself." And that's kind of what I needed to hear. You know what I mean? But I wouldn't have gone and had a massage, because I'd rather use that £80 and bought my daughter another pair of trainers, or taken her to jump, or, you know, I would invested it in her or gone out for dinner. So often men won't hear that. So they won't make that sacrifice, you know what I mean? They won't say, right, okay, maybe my child has enough shoes, or they have enough experience, and I actually need this time to spend this time and money to invest in myself, you know what I mean? And bring myself up to speed. Or maybe there is that extra half an hour in bed, which is really important. But yeah, it goes unsung. 100% goes unsung. You know, waking up at 6, doing a school run, having to work 8 till 4, then pick up child from school, come back home, making dinner, you know, it can be tough. It can be really tough.
What was really interesting here is that there was just a voice in my head, because I was away for so long. And I had consent from everyone that mattered. But there was a piece of me, it's like, oh, you're representing Dope Black Dads, you're away from your kids for 6 months. That's not dope, is it? And a part of me was like, I know deeply why I was gone. But also just, it does impact you when, like, people don't even remotely understand. And I hope I don't speak out of turn here, yeah, but there's a guy, he's like, he was a director, and he passed away. I don't know the circumstances of him passing away, but he passed away, and everybody loved him. He was a great guy. Every story I've ever heard about him was just really good guy. And he passed away, and he left a young family behind. And I think about him all the time. I think about him all the time. I think about him in a sense that he was out there getting it, like, just working. And I guarantee you there's another version of him that was in our group, and he was just like, I'm around the world shooting music videos every day. I'm so not near my family. And there's just something about when you try to explain to people about what it is that you're doing and how you're going about it and what's required. The point is that they don't have the understanding. So then it creates an environment where you're then marginalized for the thing that you can gift your family. So as a man, like, we have been programmed that being a man in the house requires you to actually earn and provide. And so that becomes our gift. It's like, there you go, sprinkle with some money. Like, I didn't sleep for 4 days, and like, I almost went to jail, but like, I got it. There you go. Give it to the family. And like, then in many ways, the fact that you provide is like, great, amazing. But then if you provide and you push it and you go to jail, then it's like, oh my God, what kind of father is this? Like, but these are the risks. This is the game. I'm not saying you should do stuff that goes to jail, but I'm saying that, like, if you don't provide, the narrative around you is that you're nothing. And then if you provide, which can cost yourself or your family freedom, time, your health, death, then it's like noble almost. It's like, it's more noble to do that than to actually say, do you know what? I'm just going to take a break and not provide for 6 months. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think there's something really problematic about, I don't mind about the wider world, but like, even family, friends, immediate people, how they perceive men is like, the success is if you provide, there's a failure if you don't, and the value is, and we're taught that our value is to do so. And when, if we're not in our gift and in our power, quite often we feel disconnected and don't feel like we have a space in the family, because the rest of it is very female normative. Does that land with any of you guys? Is that similar to what your understanding is?
I mean, yeah, on the back of what you said, I was going to say that there's also a bias that we don't see all the people that tried and failed, or even in that journey when you're trying. So let's say someone like Kevin Hart, with everything he went through and everything he's gone through to kind of get to where he is, if he stopped at any point on that journey, he could be considered a failure. Like, when his TV show wasn't produced, he could have been seen a failure. Or any of the times we got cancelled, he could have been seen a failure. But now we know, you know, what happens after that. We write him up as a success. But there's a lot of other people who fell off on that journey. And as you're saying, because they stopped there, that was a kind of final chapter, or perceived final chapter, is seen as being a failure. And so it's a very hard standard to kind of push against, because you've got that pressure on you that as soon as you drop the ball, it's all over. But at the same time, if you're not providing, you're a failure. So people are prepared to risk it all to succeed. But you know, a quote I heard over the weekend is that, like, your physical presence is more important than presence, for example. In the moment, it doesn't feel like that. You want to give everything you can to your child. You want to spoil them rotten. But we would all say now that, you know, we don't even remember the gifts that our parents got us when we were younger, but the quality of time we spent with them was more important. But I think it's just very difficult to remember that in a moment, to remember that actually physically being there is way more important than anything you're able to provide.
But do you know what? Physically being there is very important, but if you can't physically be there and you need the time to recuperate, mm, to be the best you can,
sure, yeah,
you know what I mean? Then yeah, there has to be allowances to, mm, to step away. So, you know, the 6 months you were away, Marvin, probably helped you with your mental health, really helped project you and, you know, allowed you to be here for the next 10 years. You know what I mean? And if you hadn't taken that break, or you didn't take that break, you know what I mean? You would have been a presence, not present. Mm. You know what I mean? Yeah, go on.
No, I was just going to say, to what it is, and this is only of two people asking questions that I'm inferring, so I don't know in the deep way of, like, whatever it was perceived that, and I'm at peace with it. I think what it was is just...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I think people would have preferred, not preferred, that sounds like they want me to actually demise. I think it would have been more acceptable for me to die from an aneurysm or stroke, yeah, or stress-related illness.
Right, yeah.
No, Billy, isn't it?
Than it would be for me to, like, take a break and be here. So I feel like that this is how masculinity is perceived. And it's like when people say, I'm willing to die for my kids. And it's like, I'm prepared to live for mine. What, like, no one ever considers, like, what the actual other side of that conversation is, because preparing to die is this belief that, like, you know, we're Liam Neeson, and Liam Neeson is, like, about to have his kids killed, and I'm going to die for my children. Save my children. Take me. Now, that's obviously beautiful and noble, but what world are you in? What life are you living where that's even a conversation? Mm. And if you genuinely live a life where the conversation is someone's trying to kill your kids, mm, or you, then maybe you should die anyway, because your life is probably sounds pretty wild. So I think that's noble, but it's probably appropriate. And what I'm talking about is the day-to-day guy. Like, that's not our existence. My kids aren't on the line like that. So if I find myself in a cycle of behavior that's unhealthy and you need to pull away to then recalibrate, you know, you need to have the right type of people who understand that. And I'm so lucky. Nina allowed me that. I rang her and I said, look, I need to go. She was like, go. No questions asked. I got there. I said, I was meant to go for 3 weeks. I got there and I was like, I need longer. I told her I'm missing Christmas. You have to understand that this is not small stuff. Marvin, I've watched you, cool, go take time. I then come back and I'm like, this ain't working. I need more time. 6 weeks later, I was gone again. Since 2015, I've had no days off. Not a single day. No holiday, no extended period of time. And even when I think I'm breaking, I'm not really breaking. So the idea of, like, not picking up a laptop, not having a meeting, not going to a meeting, none of those things, just hasn't happened since 2015. And that's including weekends, evenings, all that. And so I think, after a very long period of time of that happening, it was just really, really clear that maybe I needed to address this balance. And so I've consciously been trying to do that since 2018. I've obviously failed those tasks because I haven't been able to break. And I think when the time came, it became a really powerful and important moment for me to, like, take a conscious break from everything that was going on. And it really, really helped me. And now I'm, you know, slowly walking back into the world and I feel much, much better. My worry is that I had many luxuries in place to facilitate that. So, you know, I earned enough to not have to do as many things as I was doing. So I could afford to take a break. I had an amazing co-parent who was like, Marvin, I got your back every time I needed to re-up my extension. She allowed that. My mum, you know, was like, right, I'm going to support and make sure, you know, her mum had support so she could take a break. And there were people around to create a culture of, you know, she's got support, so she's not on her own for 6 months. That is unique. How many people have all of those things at their disposal? So to every other man, I feel something for, because in many ways, it's like you are the thing. And if you don't work, and if you don't make, and if you don't provide, nothing will go on. Party done. And so I think my worry is that if men don't consciously ask themselves that question, or they don't recalibrate their lives to be more affordable so that it can be afforded on less income, or you will find yourself trapped in a commitment to your bills, to your mortgage, to the expectation of your partner, wife, your children, of a certain quality of living, and it will come at the cost of your life.
Yeah.
And I think we do it too much.
I was going to say as well, I think you made a good, really good point when you're talking about, you know, the Liam Neeson scenario, being prepared to, you know, to die or kill for your kids. I think a lot of people prepare for this fantasy life that we're not really living. Like, a lot of people will say that. They'll say, you know, I'll kill for my kids if something happens. But then my question, and I've even said this to friends, like, okay, cool. If something happened to your son, if someone touched him or whatever, you'll do whatever. But when's the last time you read a book to him? Or when's the last time, you know, you went to the park with him? Because we create all these fantasy scenarios. You know, like when you're in the shower and you're arguing, you're thinking what you would have said or
throwing
what you
punches.
Would have done.
Do you know what I mean? Two.
But in reality, what are we doing? Are we turning up where we could on every opportunity to make that difference? Or are we just hypothetically holding these scenarios in our mind, imagining what we do in a worst case scenario that, you know, yeah, if my child needed a life-saving operation, then I'll go and get the bag that will do this to turn their life around. But on a day-to-day basis, we're not doing what's required. And I think as well, Marlon, you made the brilliant point when you were talking about when Marvin took a break. And I think that's exactly what I was saying, in the sense of, if you looked at it in the 6 months, someone would have said, okay, no, you're not present. That's not good. But then you look at it 2 years later, it will be like, that was the best decision you could have made. And now everyone's benefiting positively from it. And I think there's something about the framing there, that if we misframe or misrepresent the situation, then we start to call people failures, or we start to call them losers. But when you just give it a bit more grace, you know, there's so many people that have turned their life around that you look at it in the long term, you think, actually, you know, even people like, you know, we spoke about DMX a few podcasts ago. Someone like him, there was a stage in his life where people were writing him off, you know, he was on drugs, he was in prison. But then by the end, he was a legend. And he was always a legend, but by the end, there was much more affinity, many more people connected with him and had a lot more respect for him. And I think it just shows the importance of not writing people off too early, because you can just misjudge.
Do you know what? I think in our community, we need to say or allow people, it's okay to hit rock bottom, because, you know, people hit rock bottom all the time, and it's okay to be there, because, you know, the come up is good. You know what I mean? That's when you learn from your lessons. That's when you use the hindsight. Exactly what you said, Marvin, about those elders, using those guys to guide you, or those women to guide you, and, you know, create your best work and be present for your family. But as men and in our community, it is not an option to hit rock bottom. Like, you can't hit rock bottom and not be able to function, you know what I mean? Because the inference on us, or how we're viewed, is that we have to provide. If you look at our role in our community, in a family, it is to provide. I asked my dad what his role is. It's to provide. It's exactly what the same thing you talked about in Fences. I asked my granddad, it is to provide. You know, he took the boat here, came here with my grandma, set up shop, provided a roof and a home. And then my dad and cousins and everyone else came over, and that was his job. Now it's slightly different for us. We're allowed to cry and, you know, we're allowed to do more things. But it should be recognized that men hit rock bottom, and you need those support structures in place to allow you to build up. You know what I mean? And that will define the next 10 years.
Can I ask you both a question? Yeah. If you both saw a black man and a black woman crying in the street separately on different days, what would you assume? Or what would you do? Would it be different?
No, I go and ask them. I do that all the time. I sit with people all the time. There was a lady crying at King's Cross, just on the floor crying with her suitcases. Like, oh, I go on for you, what's wrong? Crying. She's like, oh.
I love that that's the way that you did it as well. Right? Proper yard man. Yeah, you walk on. You all right? Everything, Chris?
What are you crying for?
Stop your crying.
But I did, you know, I sat with her and listened to her story. You know, her boyfriend had left her. She's going to miss her train to Yorkshire. She's so upset. She could, I was like, just stand up and go and get on the train. You know what I mean? You're 21. Heartbreak, it happens. Damn. You know what I mean? And then she kind of was like, well, you're actually quite right. I gave him my card and said, you know, if you need to chat, then call me.
But beautiful. Does that matter?
No.
She wasn't beautiful. It doesn't matter.
Sorry, my eyes are doing things.
He was like, I just saw it, gave him my card. He's like,
I'm a goddamn word. Superhero.
Did it. Word.
And then you got married 3 years later.
You gave the woman with the bad weave and you gave her your card.
Bottom line is, I'm stopping and I'm asking, what's good? Are you okay?
Why have you done that for a man? I think about that, yeah. I don't know. I think when it comes to men, it's like, bruv, figure it out.
Could end up getting beat up?
Yeah, bro. He's like, I don't want to get moved to. I don't want someone to like plant drugs on me. Like, what do you want? You do it from bare far away. You're like, it's just like this. You're like, are you okay? You all right? Yeah.
Do you know what? Let me tell you a story. I was in a Caribbean shop, yeah? And I saw a boy came in. And I could see him fumbling with his coins, looking at the menu, fumbling with coin, young boy. And then he sat down at the table and put his head down. And I thought, you know, he looks like he might need help, something. And I toyed with the idea, like, you know, don't chat to him. Anyway, I thought, let me go. So I went up to him and tapped him. And I was like, what's good? But that's like a challenge, isn't it? He was like, what? No, I was like, are you okay? He's like, yeah. I was like... Okay, all right.
Fine. So someone said, yeah, that when you do that to black men, it's because you see them, and that's worse than ignoring them. And they don't want to be seen because you can see the pain and they don't want to deal with it. They don't want to process it. When someone said that to me, I was like, rah, man, that's kind of deep, bruv. I'm just telling you a story. They're like, no, if you look them in the eyes, you can see. That means they know you can see them. They don't want to see. They're just experiencing something. They don't like it. And now they've got to process it differently because they're not alone in it anymore. I was like, black men have it tough, man. It's like, we and got it's true, though. Whenever you see a road man, yeah, like I always say hello to people because like always. When I see black people, I'm like, yo, it's good, man. You're right, yeah? And he's like, yeah. But you know, this is black men are so rubbish. When we're walking towards each other, yeah, we eye contact a bit to be like, what's this? Is this a threat? Yeah. Am I going to die? Yeah. Is he going to punch me? That you scan and then you just like, you look elsewhere because you just don't want, no, you don't want the problem. But if the problem comes, you got to figure out, am I running? Am I attacking back? is there a weapon around? And so when they do that thing, I'm like, yo, what's going on? You're right, could you? And they always do this complete shock of like, yeah, man, you're cool. You're right, yeah? Just a little bit too much, like a little bit more than is required for the level of like interaction that we're having. And it's because it's like you break ice. It's like,
literally.
It's like you just chip into it and then they're like, oh, yeah, cool, man, you're right, yeah? Safe. Yeah, cool.
Fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I think for me as well, I was going to say, I think as you were saying that, it's like every other interaction they're in, they need to have that guard up. Or no, not even they, we need to have that guard up. You know, I always say when I walk into like a supermarket or a shop, I have to decide, do I want my hands in my pocket or out my pocket walking in? Because if I change my mind in the shop, security might want to have a conversation with me.
100%.
So you do kind of have that face on and you have that mindset where you're ready to say, okay, if someone tests me, not to say I want to cause trouble, but I need to be prepared to defend myself. But I think you hit the nail on the head that we don't necessarily need to see one another as a threat. And that's the problem, because when you carry that energy all the time,
you create the energy.
Yeah, exactly. You create the energy. You end up causing situations and you might feel like you're the victim. But why is it always happening to you? It's something you're doing as well. It's not just the fact that everyone else is giving you bad energy.
Yeah. I'm going to preface this by saying, yeah, that no white woman ever actually did anything in this story. Yeah. None. But like, I'm walking from Old Street. Yeah. And walking, it's hard to explain, but I'm walking basically from the Old Street roundabout to my house. 30 million miles away. I don't know when to know where I live. Anyway, so I'm walking down the path and I'm walking a little bit behind this white woman and we stop at the lights to cross the Pelican crossing. So we're now side by side. And then there's a split road, but they basically lead the same way. So I've gone right, she's gone left. Yeah. And then I've gone right, she's gone left. We've gone met up again down the road. And I was like, I need to speed up. I do not want this woman to feel like I'm one following her, that I want something. It's late. Yeah. It's like 10, it's like quarter to 11 or something. Mm. I don't even, if you scream, I'm going to scream. I don't want no problems. I just want to get home. It's late. I'm tired. And I realized in my head, I was having this whole conversation about this white woman. Because I don't want any problems. I'm not here for you. I don't want anything that's not for me. Like, just leave me alone. And then I got in my house and I was still thinking about it. And I was like, she living in my head rent free. I'm just like, this ain't okay. Like, I need to get over those things. And I just think our presence constantly is like a constant adjustment. But the empathy for black men is low as dirt. Because you're fighting the ghost of every black man that did something somewhere. Yeah,
exactly.
Of course.
Whether we like it or not. Like, it's weird because in many realms, like in the black community, we say, don't judge us on other black people. But you go speak to, and this is, I'm not saying this is wrong, by the way. You go speak to a black woman and she tell you a black man's story. Yo, you need to take a seat. There's a lot. And so as much as we say we shouldn't do that, there's so much experiences in our communities. Like, where we stand in it is that anyone can say and do anything about your likeness and you got to hold it. Like, you could, like, you got to hold it unless you have video CCTV evidence and a contract and a... That's it right now. And the power is completely outside of our hands. And so we almost become servient to the imagination of many people. Like, how much power do you truly have over your own likeness and your own presence? Now, in many ways, like, you can be like, I don't give a toss. I'm doing what I'm doing. Fine. But understand at some point, you could be the consequence of someone's imagination. And at the moment, as a black man, it's everyone's imagination. Yeah. There's no intersection that's like, black men, oh, we love them. They, without them, there is none of that anywhere. Yeah. So the rope is thin. Your movements have got to be clean and powerful, but you've got to be assured about who you are. And you may have to take some punches in the quest for social justice because what you're doing ain't the thing right now.
Do you know, I find myself in some of the jobs I had trying to be that beacon so that the next bro that comes through, they remember, he was fantastic. He listened. He did produce great work. And therefore, we can take on another young black male in our organization and they can make it happen, which is sad. We're constantly on the back foot. Well, I feel I'm constantly on the back foot if it's, you know, walking into a shop, you know, where exactly do I put my hands, or, you know what I mean? Or I smile, or I go for a run in Ali Pali, even though I don't live anywhere near there. it's more like a really fast walk than run. And it's full of non-black people. And there's a wooded area, and sometimes it might be dust, so, you know, you're jogging through the wooded area and you can see people, their faces are like, Jesus Christ. And I'm not a traditional runner, am I? I haven't got running gear on. I've got my Nike loaded tracksuit. I've got my fitted hat, you know. I'm going for a fast-paced jog and people are petrified, like, and I have to smile. Morning, afternoon, how are you? You know, just hear my voice and hear that it's non-threatening, you know. Be at ease.
How high are your octaves, bruv? You must sound.
Morning.
Hey, how are you doing? So good to see you.
Hey, I like that one. Hey.
What dog is that? What breed is it? If you ever want to not look threatening, just compliment their dog. And then they're like, oh, what's up? Come in. Come round. Pet it.
Meet Seamus. He and his wife are driving in their new Citroen C5 Aircross SUV to her birthday dinner, which he forgot in a restaurant that she had to book. She married a cliché. This could be a very uncomfortable drive. Except the Citroen C5 Aircross SUV comes with advanced comfort seating and progressive hydraulic cushion suspension, making it a very comfortable drive indeed. Citroen. Engineered for comfort. See citroen.ie.
It's so interesting because I think almost like what we're talking about is the power of these two men's conversation, yeah? And it's really moving. At the same time, you're kind of looking at it from a perspective of like, actually, men, we are different beasts and it isn't our time right now. And so in that adjustment of like people having empathy for our changes, our lived experiences, you know, the things that we've been taught that we're trying to unprogram from, it may not be there. So really it is all about us. But When they were talking about fatherhood, yeah, it's funny because Twitter obviously is a wonderful place. It's a great place for insight and fact and stuff. And there was this, you know, I saw Nick Cannon's name trending. And for me, Nick Cannon, from a perspective of business, it's like, yo, you've been around on TV as long as I remember watching TV as a child actor, whatever. And you're a bit of an icon. Like, it's a bit like Bow Wow to people slightly younger than me. It's like, you're a legend. And you know, he's gone through so many iterations, but something seems to have happened in the last 3 to 5 years where he's just gone on a mad thing. And he's just had, I think he's had 4 babies in 12 months this year. he's just I think twins and two other individual babies. And I was just like, you know, in one realm, it's like there was a debate about, is it okay to have that many children? He's now on his seventh. And I was like, yeah, because he has money. But then I immediately was like, that's not enough, though, is it? That's how do you keep that all together? How do you stop them all from... Because before it was like, I want to keep my daughter off the pole. Now I just want to keep my children out of deep therapy. That's the goal, isn't it? So how do you keep your children out of deep therapy when you've got seven children, four of them are born within the same calendar year? Like, how do you navigate that? How do you create that? Like, what were your thoughts? Did you read the story on it?
Yeah, I read it. And you know what? I've got a reverse question for this that linked back to the Red Table with Will Smith and Kevin Hart. And Will Smith asked a question, how do you tell your daughter your shady past without losing respect? The same scenario. So Nick Cannon at some point is going to have a conversation about what the hell happened in that year. You know, you had X amount of kids with X amount of women. How do you account for that? You know, someone's going to be upset along the way. People are going to get hurt along the way. And what does that teach your daughter? You know, that, you know, men are monogamous and that's okay. Or you smooth it out. You know, if you're rich and powerful, then you can do this. You know, you can sleep with who you want and create life with as many people as you want, which is not right. You know, society promotes the nuclear family. And that's what his children are going to learn in school. You know what I mean? That, you know, you have a mum and dad and, you know, it's not monogamous and you have, you know, 2.4 children and you have a nice house and that's going to be their framework. And then they're going to look at their situation and see that they've got all these brothers and sisters with various mums and dads always having a madness with someone and someone wants more money here. And it's going to be chaos. It's absolutely going to be chaos and difficult to smooth out. You know, how do you have that? What do you explain? How do you explain that to your daughter?
How do you explain your evil past, Marlon?
I ascended.
You started. Yes,
I ascended.
Tell us.
Do you know? It's really funny. My daughter asked me the other day. She was my daughter's 12. She's like, have you ever been with two women at the same time? I was like, where did that come from? And if you don't answer that question in 0.2 seconds, then you're lying. So as I was saying, I ascended from heaven. Okay,
I'm sweating for you, bro. That
1983.
Fudge!
I'm a good guy. There's no.
How did you
about
answer that
me.
Question?
I've never done anything like that.
What?
Huh?
What about those big parties that you talk about?
Yeah, business.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Never mind. Yeah, it was a long time ago. Never mind. What about you? How do you deal with your threesomes from the fans from the podcast? How do you do it?
I missed that part, but on the Nick Cannon question.
Anyway,
but yeah, with Nick Cannon, I think it goes back to what's more important, presence or presence, in a sense where, you know, he will be able to provide a life for his kids that most people will dream of, but they're not going to have all of his time in the way that they may want it. And, you know, it's a balancing act. And it's, you know, I think when you're in one position, it's easy for me to say, for example, that his physical presence would be more important. But at the same time, I saw a post this week that said all the rappers we listen to promoting negative music to our kids, they're sending their kids to some of the best schools around the world. And so there's that side of it as well. So I think he will be able to afford them a certain lifestyle. But, you know, we know children are going to want his physical presence as well. And I think the problem with Nick Cannon is a few years ago, he came out and said, after Mariah Carey, he's basically not settling down. Like he couldn't see himself being monogamous. And so everyone interacting with him in that way, anyone he dates, anyone he has a child with, they know exactly what they're getting from him because he's basically written himself off and said, I don't want to be married again.
Dick and babies. You know, this is a wrap.
pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. That's what he said. So
I'm gonna be honest, I could not live that life. I can't. It's just like there's a piece of my heart that needs to be attached to actually healthy, loving environments. The idea of just being out here and that was ever my life where I needed to have, like, I ended up having four children in a year, I would feel like such a failure.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't want to make a judgment on him because he might find a way of fixing it and putting everyone together in a giant house and, you know, growing corn and... I don't know. He might figure
what
it out.
What they do in America.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. They grow some sort of crop. I don't know. But like, I think for me, it would be a massive, massive failure. It would be a huge indictment of my decision-making process. It would be a massive slap in the face of my original two children. It would be a slap in the face of a lot of things. Just like, you know, these things are really, really important. And I think actually there's a lot of trauma that's created by men trying to recreate comfortable homes or safe homes when the first one doesn't work. Like, you know, that was your attempt. That was your shot. Create a blended family. It's one thing to go get a partner. And by the way, your kids will never give a toss about your new partner. You can say things and be like, oh, look, this is my girlfriend and it's been 5 years. They're just going to look at you like, when are you getting with my mother again? Because I don't understand this lady. She's here. I don't know what she wants. So it's like your mission is that you don't create that trauma for them. So the only way to do that is to create clear lines. My mum never brought another man in the house ever. Like, there was men around, we knew who they were, but they were never permanent fixtures. They were never in my house telling me, like, you know, to go shop and, like, who drank the Kool-Aid. That ain't never going to happen. I'm thinking of baby boy. I'm thinking of being raised as baby boy. none of those things ever really happened. And I think I thank her so much for that. I don't have a hangover with, like, men in a way because of that whole divide. I don't have a massive story about my mum because, you know, she got rid of, you know, and put a man in the house and didn't care about me anymore. Those things aren't real. And you've got to, as a dad, sometimes sacrifice your short-term needs and feelings. If you authentically fall in love and, you know, Rihanna's calling you and says, I want to build a family, then I get it. You know, take the shot. But if it's just like something that you can avoid and not something that you authentically want, and that's deeper than just your short-term feelings, then I think really like your mission is to preserve those things as much as possible and help, you know, the children you have really look after them. And that's what's kind of been on my mind recently. It's just like, I never want to have to like explain to my children why I'm like spend more time with other children and not them. That would really crush them, man. That's really a brutal thing to do without the like full justification of like, I love this person, this is my soulmate, and you know, these, you know, that is what it is, and that's going to happen. But if it's not that, you know, those stray ones that you meet at Marlon's parties that you just shouldn't.
what's the score now? Is it...
Well, at least they met people at my parties.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
No, just
saying.
Pimping out your patrons. It's so cool, man. Hey Sexy is on at If Bar on Saturday.
The Sunday show is in room.
Wow.
109B.
Nah, this is getting spicy, bruv. Man said we're in a room, you know, in a travelodge.
In the hallway.
Guys, we got a wrap, man. I got to get my son home. He's looking at me like I've been on the phone for an hour and a half. So, but no, thank you so much for that, man. That conversation was really haunting me this week, man. And I think, like, if you got a chance to go look at the Red Table Talk with Will and Kevin Hart, it's a really powerful conversation between two men. And obviously, accomplished men speak differently to challenged men. And it's a really good insight into some of those things. But I also think there's a lot to learn, like, even as a mother or a partner or a woman that's listening, how men understand their place in the world and the things that they're doing to try and like remedy those things. And I think also as a man, like if you are a good man and you know deep in your soul you're a good man, like take some concessions back for yourself, like not constant this idea of giving at all costs, you know, because in many ways like a week off can be repaired with your children. They'll understand. It's like it's different if you're, you know, just disappearing and you're out, but like if you need to take a week to yourself or 2 weeks to yourself or 6 months to yourself, do what you have to do, because the value of you being here in 10 years time is way more to explain where you were for that 6 months than it is for you to crash and burn and in the hope that somebody would nobly talk about your name the year down the line. It just, you know, it isn't worth it. And I think we want to raise our children in a really powerful way, man. Any closing thoughts from you guys, Marvin and Marlon?
Make a plan to take time off. Plan it out and see what you can do and what you can take. You know, you're all working hard and, you know, life's as difficult as it can be anyway. You know, we're living through a pandemic. I think people should definitely make a plan and factor in that time out so you can recoup because you deserve it.
Yeah. And I think one of you said it earlier, but that's the whole reason we work. We work to give ourselves that flexibility and that freedom. So if you're just working to no end, you know, you're not serving the purpose you should be. But if you're working to give yourself that freedom and flexibility, then, you know, then that's working in a kind of like in a concise, you know, matter of fact way, as opposed to just working effortlessly every hour that God sends. So yeah, I completely agree with that. You know, work to the position where you can then afford to take breaks.
Dope. Guys, thank you so much for that insight, man. I hope people really appreciate it. It really moved me this week. But yeah, let's catch up again next week and let's see what else we got going on. Marlon, it sounds like you've just sequestered yourself a space in the podcast if you're up for it.
Yeah.
Added value. Yes. It's now officially award-winning podcast, yes. So you can say that. You can put it on your LinkedIn. Yeah. Hopefully you can get more girls from it. You know, a few. I don't judge. I don't judge what you do with the repertoire from Dope Black Dad. You know, it's fine.
Can you send me a t-shirt, please, with the podcast on Dope Black Dad?
No, I will. You can just stand outside primary school and secondary schools and just try and meet women and be like, look, have you seen my t-shirt? I've got to go because women actually listen to this and they my date is remotely seriously. We are not these people. Marlon is, but
no.
I'm not. I've got
to
go.
No,
all right, thank you so much, everyone, for listening to Dope Black Dad podcast. Thank you.
All right. Ciao.
And so thank you guys for listening. I really much appreciate it. We'll be back next week with another episode. You can find us at Dope Black Dads on all social media platforms. You can also email me for a chat at hello@dopeblackdads.com. Thank you so much for listening, my brothers. I appreciate you all. We'll be back next week.
This is the new Toyota Yaris Cross. A new kind of SUV. New point of view. New compact style. New spacious feel. And exclusively self-charging hybrid. The right choice for today. Get a new perspective with the Yaris Cross self-charging hybrid. You'll never take a wrong turn with Toyota. Built for a better world.
Every day you trust your gut, and that gut feeling can lead to a kick in the guts, but your gut instinct was right, so you bust a gut because someone will have your guts if you don't. You know what your gut deserves? Glenillan Farm Yogurt. Bursting with live cultures, it's the daily way to keep your gut happy and healthy, and tastes delicious to boot. Choose Irish, choose local, choose Glenillan Farm.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.